Hello and welcome to the Creative Chronicles. This is the podcast that tells the stories of creative professionals, giving you the information, motivation you need to get started, stay focused, and thrive as a creative professional. My name is Bright Emeka, and I'm your host for today. Today in the house, we have a phenomenal mind. We have joining us today Mr. Eyitemi. He is a cybersecurity consultant and researcher. He is a founding member of NigerSec Force Security Community, organizers of NigerSec Conference. He is also a founding member of Python Nigeria Developers Community, a member of the community's board, and also member of the organizing committee of the recent PyCon in Nigeria. He's just amazing. He's a phenomenal mind. He is really, really amazing. It was a pleasure meeting him in the last Django Girls in Mida. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
It was a pleasure meeting you as well. And it was awesome having to meet you. And you as well.
Thanks. It's a pleasure, sir. Okay. Before we even get started on today's show, nice picture. I think Coca-Cola should come and pay you and
So if you know the Coca-Cola, okay. Yeah, we're the model for them. Yes.
Okay, let's get into today's podcast. We want to go back to the beginning.
Okay.
How did you get into the world of technology? And what was that thing that got you glued, as in what spiked your interest and has made you stay in tech till now?
Okay, so I'll say sometime around 2002 or 2003, sometime thereabouts. Yeah, when I came back from school one day and said, hey, I went to this cyber cafe. And he browsed, connected to the internet, and then created an email account, and it was amazing. And he bought the ticket for I think 30 minutes or so, thereabout. Yeah, so he came back, basically told me about everything he did, and yeah, him and his classmates went together and said, okay, guy, you have to try this out. And, okay, so let's save enough cash. And when I saved up enough money, I think just 16 right there for an hour. Yeah, 16 for an hour. So when I saved up about 16 for that week, I called him like, hey, let's go to that cyber cafe. Yeah, and he took me there. So he just showed me, see, this is what you do. This is your mouse, this is your keyboard, this is the monitor, this is how you open your browser, and this is how you create an email account. And so he showed me how to create an email account. And after he created one, then he left me, went to his own system to work on. And I created the second email account, created the third one, created the fourth one. Or like I have 4 accounts now. So that's basically the only thing I had to do. For almost a week or so. So I'll call my friends, do you have cash? If you don't have cash, don't worry, I'll take you with my own money. And I'll take him to the cyber cafe, and I'll create email accounts for them and say, okay, now you have an email account. Yeah, so that's what I was doing for almost a week or two. And then I started finding out, there are other things you could do. So then Yahoo chat rooms. Yeah, so I got hooked on Yahoo chat rooms. And then, it was cool having to chat with people in other countries. And then, I think first thing when you go to the chat room and you message someone, the person will ask you ASL. That's for age, sex location. Yeah, so that's the first question anybody would ask you. And from there, progressed till, I think, my brother again, he got into programming for us, web design and programming, and came back from school one day. Said, see, created a picture. This is that. He did in a virtual basic, and I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. So I remember the very first, I took his textbook and his laptop. The first code I wrote ever was on a foolscap sheet on how to build a calculator in virtual basic after reading the textbook. Yeah. And I still had a foolscap sheet somewhere in the house here. So that was the first code I ever wrote, and that was around like 2005, thereabouts. That was after years of playing around in cyber cafes, saving up my transport fare, my lunch money to go browse like Cyber Cafe. Yeah, so basically I was the go-to guy in my class. Anybody wants to check to the cafe, I would be the tour guide and all. Yeah, till I moved to program. Yeah, programming was virtual basically for a start, and it was enticing. Like, I could just write up code and build up something amazing. And then I think next I built a very simple web browser. Very, very simple web browser in Visual Basic. Then I was hooked already. So I did Visual Basic, then moved to C++. Then I was using the C++ compiler. It was amazing. Like, I could basically... Yeah, then I think I was in secondary school already then, SS2, SS3, thereabouts. And there was this computer school close to my house. So I went there because I wanted to learn how to use computers more. But I got there and I ended up teaching, becoming a teacher. So I was paying to learn, I ended up becoming a teacher. Yeah. So the only thing I really started to learn at that computer school was CorelDRAW. Because the instructor there, Omena, we just call him, was a wizard CorelDRAW. So we just say, hey, this is how to do CorelDRAW, this is how to do this. Stress. Showed me how to blend colors and everything. And I picked up. And next thing again, I was teaching CorelDRAW again at same school. So we would see it stuck. And then the guy, he was learning programming as well. So we'd bounce off ideas. Then I remember then, because since I didn't have access to a computer at home, I copied programming textbooks from my brother on a memory card for C++, Visual Basic, and QBasic. Copied the compilers as well, the C++, installed it on the training school's computer. So I'll go there and sit all day and code for money. I think I was about 14 or so, 14 or 15. I think it should be 14, 15. Yeah. But then, basically, programming started for me around 2016. Okay. Yeah, sorry, 2006, 2007. So I started programming again. But till 2010, I got into school. I was in pre-degree then. I came back home for a break, met this amazing guy who was an animation designer. I think he runs Orange VFX Studio. Yeah, and they're doing amazing work right now.
Wow.
Richard of Orange VFX Studios.
Yeah, I used to hear of Orange VFX.
Yeah, one of the best in here right now.
Amazing.
Him and his friends. Three of them. So, I met him and paid for that, took me for about a month, and I moved him back. So, for what's about and picture. I remember I was already doing graphics for it before. And so, blend of all these, and I found out that I could actually code using in Maya. So, render my designs using Python. So, instead of playing around Maya for a while, month or two, and went back to fully into design. Did design. So throughout school, I was unofficial designer for my fellowship and then for JCCF, Joint Campus Student Fellowship. Yeah, and design got boring, and I moved back to programming. I remember then in pre-degree, I was doing assignments for my seniors in 500 level, C# assignments. And then they come look for me wherever I was to do assignments, and then they'll pay me with lunch. Yeah, so they take me to buy, they go buy on the DM and the Forero. Yeah, so that was my assignment. And I was cool with that because, like, wow. I get to eat free lunch for just coding. So, okay, that was it. I played around till I got into hardware development. That was around 100 level, 200 level because I started electrical electronics engineering. And around 100 level or so, I started doing hardware development. Okay, really playing around with electronics first, then hardware development. So I met this guy, he codes only in assembly.
Are you kidding?
Jose, amazing dude, he codes only in assembly. Like, if you tell me,
wow.
Yes, only in assembly. I'm not kidding, only in assembly. And, yeah, so I learned how to code for embedded devices from him. Yeah, playing around assembly for a while, so that's why. Yeah, now I'm reaping the benefits of assembly language I learned then because I'm doing reverse engineering now, and I basically have to reach binaries and do a lot of assembly stuff, and it's way, way easier now for me. So it was foundational to my staying in tech, basically staying in tech as a developer, designer, and everything, because he would always tell me, grades or knowledge, and I would say, knowledge, knowledge matters more. Yeah, so he would tell me, okay, Rich, make sure you pass your exams, but more, you should make sure you have the knowledge that everybody wants. And so because of him, I studied extra, like, I would devote like about 2 hours for reading my schoolwork, then the rest of the time for coding, for improving my knowledge in tech generally. And got to the stage, I think at around 200 or so, my lecturers were coming to me for advice. So they come and say, see, we have to do this practical. What do you think? How should we do this practical? Because I'm already doing amazing stuff, hardware dev. Yeah, so
a lot of people know me for hardware development and even software development, security. I'm quite surprised now I'm in security and affiliate hardware development. Yeah, so basically, it's a good opportunity. I tried to do tech fully. Okay, something I didn't mention, I used to do music and I love music. I think I still do love music more than tech. Yeah, but because of this, bro, I focused more on tech and I'll say I'm not regretting it at all. Yeah, so it has been so far till after school, getting to work with amazing people, work multiple projects, build communities and all. Here I am today. Yeah, I'm not regretting it for one bit.
For you, it's the passion, the love, the community. What was that? What has been that thing that has kept you?
So a couple of things. But one is that communities thrive on knowledge sharing. And individuals grow from grow around communities. So I always try to stay around communities. I'm trying to play my own part in building up communities. So basically that's it. Like I have this community of cybersecurity experts now I'm on, and we always sharing knowledge, having conversation. Basically every conversation is about security, like we breathe, live security. So everybody's now, you see amazing guys that are CISOs, chief information security officers of financial institutions, of Fortune 500 companies across the world. Yes, big guys like that interacting with this community, and they are so humble and share knowledge, and because of that humility you always want to be around them, always want to be around the community, and so doing, you get to gain a lot more than you would have done on your own. Yeah, so basically that culture of knowledge sharing is what has kept me tech up to now.
Wow, amazing. Okay, what are some of the practices that has helped you like improve and grow? What are some of the things you've been doing that has been like, okay, this helped me very well when I was starting out?
Okay, I think first thing I would say is Google. That's one of the best practices. Like, I hear a new word, a new concept, a new technology, and I go check it out on Google. So I'll go Google, like for example, when I started in security, when I was learning programming to security, I'll go Google how to hack websites or how to hack Windows 7. And then from that, maybe if I read through and I see something about going to booting into recovery mode, I'll go Google about recovery mode and read up like about 4 or 5 articles on it. So I was Googling a lot, reading a lot, yeah. And then asking questions. Yeah, that's very important. Asking questions. Like you see, he will ask questions, never loses his way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that helped me a lot. Both physically in life and in the industry. Yes, that has helped me. Like I always ask questions. So if you ask questions, you never lose your way. You may get people may give you wrong answers, may give you never answer you at all, but definitely you won't lose your way. At least the answers would prod you on the path to go. Yeah. So asking questions, always researching. Yeah. And then I think sharing knowledge too. Yeah. That's one of the core values I hold dear. Sharing knowledge. Like I think Proverbs, one of my favorite scriptures is Proverbs 23:23.
And sell it not.
Buy the truth and sell it not.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could spend as much as possible to get knowledge, yeah. But it should be shared freely and basically share. you could get people to pay for your time for shared knowledge, yes, but for the knowledge itself, it should be shared freely. So basically, that I teach a lot, share knowledge with people a lot. Yeah, and I found out that when you teach, you learn like 2 times better. So you see new perspectives, the things which you felt you have. Yeah. So basically, that's research, in questions.
Wow, amazing!
And then
amazing.
Sharing knowledge.
From what you said, I'm thinking you'd be an open source person. Very well.
Yes. Like you say, I'm an open source evangelist, open sourcer. Yeah. Something else I should have mentioned, collaboration. Yeah. Collaboration helps you to grow in this industry. Yeah. So reach out to people, look out for a way you can add value to whatever projects you're working on. And basically that's it. So learn to collaborate. That's one of the things practices that help you. Collaboration, There are lots of projects in this industry, both security and tech industry, that I know have collaborated on. I just basically reached out to them like, hey, I heard you're working on this amazing project and I'd like to contribute. What way do you think I can contribute? Basically like that.
Okay. If you were to start all over again in your career now, what are some of the mistakes or some of the things you would not do or some things you would do more of?
Things I would not do, like mistakes, pitfalls to avoid. One would be working on projects without signing contracts. So, if you're going to work on a project, make sure you have legal documentation on ground before you even start the project. Trust me. It will save you a lot of stress. It will save you a lot of heartache. Basically, have legal documentation for every project you're working on. Now, legal documentation could be just emails that define the scope of the project, and then your role, your level of participation in the project, paid for the project. So it doesn't have so something like that, documentation to basically guide and for you to bring up in case of any future disputes. Trust me, it will help you. I worked on multiple projects without documentation, without even asking for remuneration in return, right from the beginning. So by the time halfway into the project, when I was asking, so what am I going to get paid for this, or what's your compensation plan for this, I was told, just it already. So before you start any projects, have legal documentation or have a form of documentation, and discuss on remuneration or compensation plan right from the start. Yeah, that's one. Then what else? I'll say certifications here. So, right from the start, I've never been a certification person. But I think in this tech industry in Nigeria, you need certifications to generally take the way through. You need certifications for people to believe you know your stuff. If you know they see, you can do this, you can do that, you can do that. So, what certifications do you have? It's like, as it is, what degree do you graduate with, or what way they ask generally? So, certifications, I'd have done more certifications, but it was really, really cheap. Yeah, so I should have done certifications then when they were very, very cheap and easy to do, and I had the money to do them. Right now, they are very, way expensive, you know, the Naira dollar for the fluctuation.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a main certification now. $500. Oh, it has always been $500-$600, I think. And then back in 2013, when I would have done it, it was about 60 something thousand. Now, $500 is no longer 60 something thousand. So then they were very, very cheap then. I should have done them. I was looking for them then. I knew what, but I'm not a certification person, so. Ouch. I just need to show people how good I am, and that's it. Yeah, it's working for me. Like, people say, this guy is good, knows his stuff, amazing. But next thing you ask, so what certification do you have? Yeah. So that's been an issue. So, projects, and then, what's the competition plan? Those are things I would have, if I have to start with, I would do better at.
Wow, amazing. Okay, let's review and talk about security. So there's a software that believes that it's an illusion, that it's an illusion, that it's not true. What's your own perspective? Is it really a threat or?
Security won't be really a general threat. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is that nothing is actually secure. So there are always threats. There are always means of breaking through security. So nothing is ever secure. Like you see, nothing is 100% secure. You can attain up to say 98% of security, and somebody from nowhere, one 16-year-old hacker, will still come and break through your security. So security, it depends on how you look at it. You might think it's an illusion because you never attain 100% security. So you can say it's an illusion. But then there are always threats. If I look at threats, there are threats to technology, which is what most people focus on. Threats to technology, how it affects our everyday life. Threats to processes. Then threats to people. Like we say in security, people are always the weakest link in the chain. So in this cycle of three, technology, people are always the weakest. So it's easier to exploit. You can first for technology. If today a particular technology was exploited, the manufacturer or the vendor will come up with a patch for it, right? If the process, if people find a way to break through processes, to navigate through processes, you come up with the complexity factor for processes. So basically, you could restructure the process and then block all loopholes. But for people, you could never, like they say, I don't really buy into it though, but like they say, there's no patch for human stupidity. So, I don't exactly buy into that quote though, but the thing is, basically what it tries to say is that no matter how much you try, humans will always be the weakest factor in the triangle of technology, process, and people. Humans are easy to exploit. So all you just need to do is find a way to manipulate people. And no matter how you try to beef up security of the human, you try to tell yourself as a person, this is what should be done, this is how I should be secure, and this is that, someone will still find a way to manipulate, to break through your defenses. So that makes it seem as if security is an illusion, because you can never attain 100% security. So the day we can fix up security of humans, as we are working towards for technology and processes, then we can say we are 100% secure, and security is total and all encompassing. But then know that there are threats, there are always threats to people, processes, technology. And so we are security professionals, we're always working day in, day out to try and achieve very high level of security, but you can never attain 100% security. Not yet. Maybe we'll get to that stage in the near future where we can attain 100% security. But for now, so maybe with the emergence of AI, a lot of deep learning, we could get to that stage. But for now, we're still struggling to attain that.
Wow. Okay, are there some measures I could take to improve the security of my data and my system, both online and offline?
Yes. Lots of measures. So, if you're focusing on offline, for offline security, more security threats offline are structured around physical threats. So, for example, my system, people that have access to my system could pose threats to a physical security of my system offline. So, those are things you're looking at, who has access to accessibility to the location of data. Then, protection around the data offline. So, those are major things you look at when proposing measures to solve security problems of your data offline. Then online, so in simplest terms, like you say, get an antivirus, be careful of links you click online, what else? Do not have an antivirus that provides optimum malware protection. Protection against viruses, trojans, worms, and all. Basically, malware in general. Have antivirus that provides optimal malware protection. What else? I won't mention names, so it won't be like I'm trying to sell a product. But yeah, but then there are lots of amazing security products you could antivirus products platforms you could look at. So just basically look for top those in top five. That's so if you're looking at costs, look for the free ones. If you're looking at cutting against costs, look for the free ones. Or if you could pay for it, actually afford to pay for it, look for the best paid premium.
Okay.
This is antivirus platforms. What else? Yeah, social media security is equally important when you're looking at protecting your data online. So like we say, we have a technology called the OPSEC, operational security. So basically, your operational security, how you relate online, even offline though, how you relate, to what extent you divulge information at all. Those are equally measures you look at when trying to improve your security. Constantly try to follow up with security checklists and standards. Yeah, basically that. So there's this project I worked on last year, with a cooperation of CCHOP, safeonline.ng. So I think it's applicable here because it provides actionable guides on how people can stay safe online. Safeonline.ng, that's the URL to the project. So we actually built it as a guide for activists, journalists, NGOs, active citizens on how to stay safe online in light of the work they do and the fact that they are constantly targeted by malicious threat actors. But it's still applicable to the everyday person who uses the internet, who uses devices, mobile phones, laptops, and all. So there are lots of guides there in the form of articles, how-tos, and basically actionable guides, what to do, tools to use to provide security for your online activities. So safeonline.ng, it's the URL to the project. What else? Yeah, I think so. That basically covers much. Yes, everyday users. Yes, that covers it.
Okay. How about for like developers and like technologists who that create?
So for developers, there are standards to follow for secure coding, secure development, building apps securely. So for web developers and mobile developers, there's the OWASP standard, Open Web Application Security Projects standard, of which I happen to be a co-lead for the Nigeria chapter. So OWASP basically came up with a standard on how to securely develop applications, both mobile and for web. So there are lots of guides. Basically just take for OWASP's development guide. Then there is the OWASP top 10 that highlights the top 10 prominent vulnerabilities for each year. So there's the OWASP top 10 for 2017 now, which highlights top 10 vulnerabilities, web vulnerabilities, both web and mobile vulnerabilities, and then basically provides an actionable guide on how to mitigate against these vulnerabilities. What else? So basically, for developers, so it's pretty easy and straightforward. And then most frameworks are trying to incorporate security, a security-first methodology. So most development frameworks, like for example, I know React.js by default incorporates security. Then Django as well. I remember of Django Software Foundation, and I know one of the things we actively push for is security-first in web applications. So there are a lot of security by default configurations in the framework already that you don't have to manually have to do again. So they come by default to the framework as security mechanisms. What else? And so that basically, for developers, go for frameworks that have security first, have a security first approach. Basically built for, and then when building, so look at technologies you're building, check to see if there are known vulnerabilities on that technology, on that platform, and then look out for ways to mitigate. But OWASP's so the OWASP Mobile Application Security Guide, and there's the one for web application. I can't remember the title now, but basically they cover all, basically have an open-ended approach to cover all security, possible security positions you might encounter.
Wow, amazing. Amazing.
Is it possible for you to share links?
Yes.
Send you links to
Definitely. I'll put them in the show notes. The links will be in the show notes.
So there's OWASP project inventory on the OWASP site, OWASP.org. OWASP project inventory. So it's an inventory of all OWASP projects for a quick developer for OWASP projects. So guide to learn secure web applications against most common web vulnerabilities, both for web and for mobile. So there's OWASP top 10. There's AppSec application security tutorials. And there's OWASP cheat sheets. Then they are testing frameworks as well to test and see. So basically, you want to learn and see how vulnerabilities, you want to see vulnerabilities and learn how they happen. They are testing a framework as well. There's a security shepherd, there's web boots, and there's OWASP bricks. I think OWASP bricks is a PHP vulnerable site. So you see all these, you can see vulnerabilities, how they happen, and then you learn how to exploit them, and then you know how to now fix. Then there are checklists. Like I said, there's the OWASP ASVS application security verification standard. So basically provides a basis for testing application technical security control. Then the secure coding practices, a quick reference guide. Yes, a quick reference guide for security coding practices. So basically, all these are in place for developers to use to develop application securely. Yeah, basically.
Wow! Amazing! I'm just sitting here and imagining the kind of work that has been done already to ensure that secure applications are developed. Amazing. And thank you so much for your time. Like, I really appreciate, boss.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Before we continue, let's talk about girl tech education. I noticed that you have been involved very, very much, facilitating and also teaching and coaching a lot of Django girl programs. What do you think can be done? What can be done to facilitate easy access of materials and mentors? What do you think can be done, as in, by everyone, both other developers and tech foundations and a couple number of people? What can be done to enable girls thrive in tech?
Okay, so actively for the past 2 years plus, I've been involved in girl tech education, mentoring girls across West Africa generally. I think at last count, something about 450 or 60 girls I've mentored. And I've learned a couple of things, or not just a couple of things, learned a lot of things from these ladies. Ladies want to get involved in tech. But then, a lot of factors mitigating against this. One is the bro culture, where guys see tech as a men's world only, and then do a lot to kick women who are already in tech or who are coming to tech, kick them out, or make their entry painful and terrible. That's one of the things. And then basically, the traditional setting where tech is seen as a guy, basically you're seen as a guy's world, and women for that role, duties to do or not tech, but women want to get tech, and so a lot of organizations are trying to make the facilitation, make the process professionals into tech, trying to make it easy. And basically, if anything could be done to facilitate this process for ladies, it should be that organizations should get involved. Nigerian organizations, most especially, should get involved in girl tech education. You take a position, you should strive for a male-female balance in your tech,
workforce,
yes, strive for a balance. So people say they want diversity in their workforce, but you're not actively doing anything to get girls involved. So shout out to a lot of organizations like, for example, Budget, Twitter Wave, which other? I think CCO as well, who have actually sponsoring GailTech project across Nigeria for a while now. Now, these organizations, they don't just say they want to see women in tech, but they're actively working to ensure this happens. So other organizations should take, basically, emulate these guys and sponsor events, do hackathons that would get more women involved in tech, open applications for more women in tech. Yeah, so have roles and when make calls for applications, open it equally, have an equal application process for women as well, not just for guys. What else? And then have mentorship programs. Yeah, that's more important. Mentorship programs. So have internship mentorship programs that would get more ladies to want to join tech. So open calls for women. So for example, I do this project now where I'm mentoring just women in cybersecurity. People who are interested in getting cybersecurity, I mentor them and then link them up with organizations where they can work with. Now that's just me as an individual. How about organizations actively taking this up? So you have awesome professionals on your team, right? Just get two or three of them to mentor a couple of women in tech, women getting into cybersecurity or getting to take any field at all. And then a period of time, so have them come on as interns, mentor them for like 4-6 months, and then before you know it, they did amazing. And from what I've come to see, women, because they've been out of tech for a while, so getting into tech, any opportunity they get, they utilize it very well, and they turn out to be amazing people at what they do. Exactly. So basically, we need to see girls thrive in tech, and things should be done to enable this happen. So like I've said, organizations should be actively involved, individuals as well. Individuals, is successful already as a techpreneur or as a techie. So why not mentor, get people around, mentor them, get more leads in tech, basically that.
Wow, amazing. You are doing a whole lot of things together, juggling plenty of things, being the coach, being the cyber security expert, the developer. How do you balance all this? What do you do when you're not working?
When I'm not working, okay. It depends on how you need to work.
Okay. Apart from modeling on the beach.
Okay. I model on the beach, yeah. Okay, I work on the beach as well, yeah. So that's something I'm actually pursuing, to working on beaches across the world for the rest of this year. Yeah, so for me, that's a way of balancing it, yeah. Work on the beach, I play and work at the same time. But then, I started jogging recently. I used to walk a lot, do lots of long walks. But now I'm jogging. People say I'm getting too fat and big. So, yeah, let me try and burn up more calories. Let me move from walking to running. Like I said earlier on, I do music, yes. And funnily, I kind of like music more than tech. Yes.
Jazz,
yeah.
Jazz.
So, I'm going to confess, I'm a retired jazz musician. Retired, yes. Because I no longer actively play for any band or church or anywhere. But I play music my age, yeah.
What instrument did you play?
Used to play the piano, guitar. And then occasionally trumpets and violin. Occasionally. So what else? So I get involved in social conversations a lot. On Twitter. Yeah, I have my public Twitter account and a troll Twitter account which nobody knows of. What else? Yeah, okay. So I just basically get crashed at events, looking for jobs at events. Yeah, so that's the way of playing. What else do I do? Nothing much more than that. Almost everything it was that I work. Yeah, okay. So yeah, I think I should get to do more playing now.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll have to work the balance. Yes. Yeah, okay, then. Because, so I think I actively go out for music events. Afropolitan vibes. Yeah. And then try to flash around. Yeah, basically that.
Wow.
My name is boring, right?
No. It's amazing. It's phenomenal, boss. It's phenomenal. Amazing. Okay. Before I finally let you go, two more things. Or three.
Okay.
I've had an amazing time. Like, I must tell you this. I've had an amazing time. Okay. If you would demystify one myth for us today, like, what's one myth people have about security? One myth. People think it's correct, but it's not.
Have you seen the movie Nikita? The series Nikita?
I must confess, I did not see it.
Okay. I'm looking for one of the popular movie where you see everybody just hacking, you see too much screens, a lot of things going up on the screen. I'm looking for what popular movie now. We just see a lot of things going up on screens and
Green Arrow.
Nikita. Okay, yeah, Arrow. Okay, yeah, something like Arrow now. Yes, Arrow. That you see a big screen, and you see a lot of things running up on screens, and all the CSI movies, and all. Yeah, that's not how it is in security. So we do have big screens. Yes, we do have screens with a lot of colored lines. So red, green, blue. Yes, but that's not how hacking is or how security is. So it's not as glamorous as movies painted as scripts flying all right, left, up and down. It involves a lot of at a particular level, it involves a lot of coding. Yeah, it's boring to most people. It's boring to most people, but it's quite interesting. And when you're in it, it's amazing. But the way movies paint it, that's not how security is. That's not how hacking is. Yes. Maybe just few movies I've gotten hacking perfectly, like Mr. Robot. Yeah, so everything done in Mr. Robot, everything is real. Yeah. The tools used in Mr. Robot are tools we use in our everyday activities, everyday life as security experts. Every single tool used in Mr. Robot. Every single technique used in Mr. Robot are things we use. Yeah, so I think that's the only movie that has gotten hacking perfectly. Well, not perfectly exactly, but to an appreciable level.
Wow.
Yeah, close. Yeah, exactly. What else? Yeah, so basically, movies portray hacking as something glamour. And so when you tell someone you're a hacker, and they're looking like, wow, if you touch my phone, I'll lose my data. If you just shake me, my phone will be hacked. Nah. It's not as glamorous as that.
Wow. Amazing, boss. Okay, on the flip side, if you could have one superpower, what will it be?
One superpower? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now there are lots of superpowers to look at.
If you just have
not
one.
So.
If you could just have one.
Not so. Sometimes I want to be Batman's powers. Just be rich.
that's an amazing superpower, I must tell you.
sometimes I just want to feel that power, just rich. But then the techie and the knowledge junkie in me won't pick Charles Xavier's power.
Yeah.
So be able to read minds and cast.
That's phenomenal. That's an amazing superpower, boss.
Yeah. So that's because I like knowledge a lot, and I want to see what goes on in people's heads, and I want to talk to people without having to say a word. Yeah, but apart from that, so I'm going to be greedy. I'll go for Batman's powers. Just
yeah,
rich.
That's a cool superpower, boss. Okay. I've really had fun, and I've had an amazing time. Okay. On the final notes, what would be like your closing words for our audience, both techies and non-techies alike, security people and the rest of the world like us that are not security experts?
Okay, I'll just try. Can I make it two, please?
Yes.
Yeah, can I make it two things, please? Okay. So,
So one is if you're looking at getting into tech, you're not in non-tech now, or you're a techie because you heard, oh, my friend does this, a programmer, he's a developer, he's a designer. Well, in tech, we do not need everybody to be developers, programmers, designers, hackers, or whatever, all you have. We need other people to do, there are a lot of things in tech we need other people to do. For example, we need people who are event planners in tech. We need people who are evangelists in tech. People who would preach about products and basically like salesmen, but evangelists we call them. So we need people like that in tech. We need lots of people. We need people cut across almost every other profession in tech. We even need accountants, we need lawyers in tech. So you don't have to be a developer to be tech, to be called a techie. You don't have to be a hacker. You don't have to be a designer because they're regarded as a techie. Do whatever it is you're doing, but translate it to tech. Whatever it is you're already doing, existing. Yeah. So event planner, just basically bring it to tech. Organize tech events, translate your knowledge to tech. That's all that's required for you to tech. Yeah. So you don't have to start learning coding. Along the way, you could learn those, yes, but you don't have to start learning coding to be a techie or to break into the tech space. Then secondly, something like I tell you, quite late in life, and just say sometime this year. Actually. Learn to talk about what you've done and what you're doing. Yeah. So if you're working on a project, if you worked on an amazing project, don't be too humble to not talk about your projects. You don't have to come out and sound boastful, but talk about projects you've done. So we're having this conversation on Twitter about a week or so ago, where imposter syndrome, where like you feel like you're an imposter in whatever you're doing, But then exactly, you're not good enough, even though you have the skills. So talking about projects you've done helps to build your confidence. Mm-hmm. In yourself, and it helps people to see that you're capable of doing what you say you can do. So talk about your projects, count your blessings, name them one by one. So count your projects, name them one by one. What you know, surprise you how much you think and how much you've done as compared to what you think you can do. So basically, name your project, whatever it is you've done, name them, talk about them. People need to hear about what you've done. Yes, that's something I didn't learn up till January this year, and I've started doing that now. So I'm talking about projects I've done, stuff I'm working on. Yeah. Now, like I said, you don't have to play about it, but talk about it. Mm. And like you say, half of in Nigeria to succeed, you need to know your stuff. You need to know your stuff to an extent, know people, and then package your stuff.
Yeah.
So basically, that's it.
Wow.
Talk about what you do.
Whoa, amazing, boss, amazing. I am so happy and delighted you took this time out to speak with us today. I am very, very grateful. I appreciate it, sir.
And I'm grateful for you having me on podcast as well.
It's a pleasure. We'll definitely do this another time when we speak about another thing. It's phenomenal having you.
I look forward to this game.
Okay, to our audience out there, I just picked a whole lot of information and actionable content from today's episode. Looking forward to you implementing and doing. It's not just about hearing and listening, it's about the doing. Have an amazing weekend. I will see you next week.